In the following conversation, I talk with Chris Miller about his book Chip War, which is a New York Times bestseller. Microchips are invisible for most of us, but they are of world-shaping importance. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Chris as much as I did. Enjoy listening. Okay, Chris, let's go. Let me start with that I really love your book.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Especially because it changed my perspective. I always thought that the top of the food chain technologies are artificial intelligence, autonomous driving, electric vehicles, batteries. Now I realize that all those depend on something which was invisible for me before reading your book. Could you please elaborate on why semiconductors are so important?
Well, it's a great question because most people never think about semiconductors, and we rely on chips for all aspects of our daily lives, in our refrigerators, in our smartphones, in our computers. A new car will often have 1,000 chips inside of it, and then there are chips in the data centers that process and remember most of our data. But almost everyone has never bought a chip. You buy chips that are buried deep in your electronic devices, and most of us never see chips either. And so it's very easy to ignore them. But in fact, all of computing, all communications today, all sensors like cameras or audio sensors, they all rely on lots and lots of chips, which have advanced at just extraordinary rate. And just in one data point to put on the table at the outset, computing capabilities, thanks to chips, have improved roughly 1 billion fold relative to 70 years ago, because today, if you go to the store and buy a new smartphone, the primary chip on that phone will have 10 or 20 billion transistors that are providing computing power on it. So it's the most complex manufacturing that humans have really ever done.
And it's also, yeah, it's completely invisible, and we are throwing chips away, right? So when a new iPhone is coming out, I'm just throwing my old one away, and I don't know what's in there, right? So how important are those semiconductors for technological progress in general? So if you would like to be on the top edge of technology, how important are those microchips?
Well, they're really critical because better chips enable first, faster computation, second, more data storage and memory, and third, lower power consumption. And so for many devices, lower power consumption is actually critical. How do you have your smartphone work for hours at a time? It's because it's really, really efficient at power consumption. And there's just a tiny number of companies that have the capabilities to produce cutting edge chips. Every smartphone you buy will have a vastly more capable chip than a smartphone that you previously owned. Same thing for your computer. And then we don't ever see the chips inside of data centers. But the reason why, you know, today none of us even think about the cost of storing our data is because it's gotten so cheap thanks to huge advances in data center chips. And data centers are really where much of the innovation is happening today, especially when it comes to AI, because all advanced AI systems are trained in vast data centers. We see the results when ChatGPT is released to the public, but all the work that's being done is chips and data centers helping ChatGPT learn about the world and develop intelligent responses to our questions. And so data centers are really absolutely critical for understanding how much we're reliant on chips.
So it seems like a really profitable business. And you already said it's hard to do, but why is it so hard to get into that?
Well, I think it's hard for a simple reason, which is that there's nothing more complex that humans have ever made than a chip. You know, take your smartphone, open it up. The primary chip will have, call it 15 billion transistors. And to fit 15 billion transistors on a chip the size of your fingernail, each one of them is roughly the size of a coronavirus. So this is ultra, ultra precise manufacturing. The transistors themselves are measured in a handful of nanometers, billionths of a meter. And the scope for error is almost zero, because just a small number of errors can cause your chip to malfunction or not to work at all. And so the machine tools that are needed for this manufacturing are themselves the most precise tools that have ever been invented. So just to give you one example, in a cutting edge chip, one of the tools you need is a tool that can lay down a thin film of material just 4 atoms thick with basically perfect uniformity. I mean, this is manufacturing at literally the atomic level, where misplacing one atom can at times have catastrophic impacts. And yet we can do it so cheaply that we can all buy phones that have hundreds of chips inside of them.
Yeah, I need to get used to measuring things in four atoms. This is really ridiculous. And so that means there are different kind of layers in creating something like that, which is you need the machinery, you need to have the right resources to do it, right? And then you also need to do heavy research and development, because if the advantages are so fast, you have to do constant research and development.
That's right. And for each type of chip, there's a different design of that chip that you need to undertake. So there's on my phone, for example, there's the main chip will run the operating system, and then there's a different chip that manages the Wi-Fi connection, a different chip for the Bluetooth, a different chip for the camera, one for the audio, one for the connection with the cell phone network. And all these chips are designed differently. Some of them are manufactured differently, but the design itself is extraordinarily complex. And there's often just a couple of companies that know how to design any given type of chip. And they've got to all be racing forward at the rate dictated by Moore's law. So the complexity is really extraordinarily high. The cost involved is extraordinarily high. And so there's just a couple of companies that have these capabilities.
And when I'm right, there's no company who does all at once. So there are companies who are doing the design, there are companies who are creating the machinery, there are companies who are manufacturing the chips, but there's no company who's doing the whole thing, right?
That's right. No one comes even close to doing the whole thing. And in fact, I think, it's hard to measure quantitatively, but I think it's fair to say that the chip industry has the most complex supply chain, from the top of the supply chain, using the software tools to design chips and acquiring the resources, all the way to the finished chip. There are often dozens of companies involved directly in the production process of a chip.
So which companies or countries are the leaders in doing that? And also interestingly, why?
Well, when it comes to chip manufacturing, if we're talking about processor chips, like the type of chip in your phone, there's one company, TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, that has 90% market share in the production of advanced processors, like those that go in phones or computers or data centers. But that company itself is reliant on the rest of the supply chain. So it needs to acquire tools, these kind of ultra complex machines, from companies like Applied Materials in California or ASML in the Netherlands, which themselves have almost monopolistic positions in the production of the types of equipment that they have this expertise in making. And then you need to acquire chemicals that are used in chip making. And because of the precision involved, the chemicals have to be purified to a 99.999% level. And so there's just a couple of chemicals companies, largely in Japan, but also a couple in Europe and the US, that produce chemicals with the requisite level of precision. You've got to have all of these different facets to produce a functional chip at the cutting edge.
How do they do it? So your book is also describing the history of microchips and semiconductors. And you're also writing about, like, the Soviet Union, for example. They started also out having really advanced technology. And now today you have some companies which are far ahead. How did they do it?
Well, there's been a trend of concentration in the industry as the engineering has gotten more complex, as the costs have risen. Segments of the industry that used to have 5 or 10 players who are at the cutting edge now have 2 or 3, or maybe just one player at the cutting edge. And so that concentration has meant that the winner in each segment has an oligopolistic or even monopolistic position. And the ultimate answer as to how do they do it is that they produce better products at a more rapid rate than their competitors. It's just a matter of racing forward as fast as you can, because every new generation of chip gives you both more computing power, but also generally lower power consumption and lower cost. They all go together. And so it's been this extraordinary race, which has just seen a couple of countries play a big role. And so today, if you want to make a cutting edge chip, you basically need complex inputs from just 5 countries or 5 regions, Europe in general, but especially the Netherlands is the key player. the US, Japan, Taiwan, and South Korea. Basically, no one else plays a important role in cutting edge chip making. But you need inputs from all of those countries to, for example, make the chips that go into your smartphone.
That also leads to that semiconductors are this kind of invisible resource, which is kind of playing a really important role internationally and also in regards of military operations.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And you see it especially as it relates to AI today. So, you know, most of us think of AI as something that will be used in civilian purposes, which it certainly will be. But militaries and intelligence agencies are already trying to apply AI for those uses as well. And so governments have inevitably asked themselves, well, first off, what capabilities do we have to produce the chips that enable AI? And then second, how do we make sure that our friends can access those chips, but our adversaries can't? And today, if you look at the chips that that are used for training AI systems, they're largely produced by one company, NVIDIA, in the United States, and largely manufactured by one company in Taiwan. And they need this complex supply chain that I've described to you. And that's why over the past couple of years, we've seen a series of new controls from Japan, from the US, from the Netherlands, from Taiwan, dictating who can acquire the tools and the chips that are used for AI training. And this whole sphere has become politicized because AI won't only be about ChatGPT. Governments realize it will be used for many good purposes, but also for some bad purposes, and governments want to have influence and control over who gets access to these very powerful tools.
And we were talking about the Netherlands. I think there are some companies over there, like NXP, for example. I think it's a Dutch company. How about Germany? We're both in Germany at the moment. So how about Germany? Is Germany left behind in this race?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that. There's a couple ways that Germany plays a big role. The first is in the production of the machine tools that we've discussed. There are actually a lot of German components in those machine tools. So ASML is the Dutch company that produces these absolutely critical chip making tools. But inside of an ASML system, there's a set of mirrors and optics produced by Zeiss, a German firm. Zeiss is the only company in the world that can produce them. There's a high-powered laser, actually a series of lasers produced by a company called Trumpf, a German company. And so as you start to dig into the supply chain of machinery, a lot of the precision tooling comes from Germany. So people don't think of Zeiss as a semiconductor firm. They think of optics, understandably. But in fact, you need very specialized optics to make semiconductor manufacturing equipment. So Germany plays a big role there. Secondly, in certain segments of chip making, German firms have impressive market positions. So for example, we've been talking mostly about digital semiconductors that are used for computing. There are also semiconductors used for power management. So for example, inside of an electric vehicle, you need a whole lot of complex semiconductors to manage the battery and the powertrain. And German firms like Infineon, for example, is one of the market leaders in this type of semiconductor. You can't use these chips to train AI. They're totally different in their design, but they're very important, both in the auto industry and across manufacturing sectors. So that's another segment where Germany actually plays a pretty significant role. So I think if you step back, I think Germany would like to have an even bigger role in the chip industry, but it wouldn't be accurate to say, well, there aren't any cutting edge chips produced in Germany, therefore Germany's an irrelevant player. That's simply not true.
For our chat, I researched a little and I found two bigger things happening in regards of semiconductors in Germany, which is Apple has been in Munich for more than 40 years, when I'm right. And they're investing 1 billion euros to expand their silicon design center in Munich. So when I got it right, it's the design of the chips. And also TSMC is coming to Germany, when I'm not completely wrong.
It's very big news, I think. And TSMC, until very recently, almost all of their manufacturing was in Taiwan. They had a couple of small facilities in China, but all of the cutting edge manufacturing is in Taiwan. Now the company is in the process of beginning to slowly diversify its manufacturing base. They're opening a new facility in Japan, one in Arizona in the US, and then this new facility that was recently announced in Germany. I think this is big news both for TSMC, but also for Germany, represents, I think, a vote of confidence in the fact that Germany is going to remain a big player in the chip industry, and TSMC's investment is going to help that. There's also another one worth noting is Intel. The U.S. firm is also going to be building a big facility in Germany as well. That was announced earlier this year. And so I think Germany, just from these two facilities alone, can be pretty confident it's going to play an important role in chip manufacturing going forward. But as you said, the design capabilities are also really important. And chip design, you know, many people, I think, over-index on manufacturing, but chip design is very, very hard, very, very technologically complex, and very, very profitable. It's actually the most profitable segment of the entire supply chain of producing chips. And I think design is actually a place where when political leaders talk about the semiconductor industry, they're thinking of big factories where you can have photo opportunities around them. But actually design is a place where there's not enough attention given. And there are extraordinarily profitable companies that have been created around the chip design business.
What kind of skills or what kind of education do you need in order to do something like that?
Well, it's a mix of backgrounds. Certainly there are people with electrical engineering backgrounds doing chip design, but there are also people with material science backgrounds who understand how designs will interact with the materials themselves once they're put into silicon. And then finally, there's a lot of computer science and programming involved as well. And that's what makes the industry so complex is that, you know, no one goes to university and studies everything you need to know to make a cutting edge chip, because it requires so many different disciplines to produce. That makes it exciting, but it also makes it very hard because you need to bring together teams of people from very different backgrounds.
When you wrote your book and you did all the research, did you have a chance to talk to all of those companies to look into their facilities and how they do things?
I did, and touring a chip making facility is an extraordinary process. That inside of a fab, as they're called, it's among the most purified air environments that exist. There's extraordinary ventilation systems. You have to be covered head to toe in a special suit, because a single dust particle, and dust particles are vastly larger than the transistors inside of the chip in your phone. So a single dust particle can cause immense disruption. And fabs are huge facilities. I was recently in Arizona, where TSMC is building another facility there. And they have on site the seventh largest crane in the world, which is moving around huge beams of steel. And we don't normally think of high tech as requiring massive pieces of construction equipment. But in fact, the scale of these facilities is so large, and you need the scale to be economically viable, that just the engineering alone is really pretty extraordinary.
If you take a look into the future, where do you see the industry and also the global chip landscape, let's say in 5 years? What's going to happen?
Well, I think there are two key trends that are reshaping the industry. The first is the geopolitical shifts that we discussed, the increasing focus on supply chain security and resilience, which is driving a wedge between a China-focused chip industry on the one hand and a rest of the world chip industry on the other. And that'll have huge downstream effects in terms of where your phone is assembled, where your computer is assembled, where your the servers inside of data centers are assembled. And we're just in the early stages, I think, of watching all of the different second-order effects of that. So that's the first trend. The second trend is artificial intelligence, which is going to reshape the chip industry, because chips will make possible not just the training of big AI systems like OpenAI's GPT systems, but also the application of AI in all sorts of different use cases. And so we're going to need new chips, different designs to make artificial intelligence efficient on our phones and in our cars and in industrial equipment and in medical devices. And so we should expect, I think, a wave of creative new chip design and chip manufacturing capabilities that are coming on to harness AI and to apply it to all the different use cases that we hope to apply it to.
Amazing. Yeah, I loved it. Thank you very much. So I don't want to steal more of your time. Beautiful. Thanks a lot. I hope you can enjoy Berlin a little.
Yes, indeed. Well, thanks for having me on the podcast. And yeah, good talking to you.
Chris, thank you very much.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.